Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 93 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. You can visit their online gallery at saatchiart.com. Before I introduce you to my lovely guest today, I forgot to mention this last week. I'm not sure how, since it's the only thing I can think about lately, but I will be one of several instructors at the European Cultural Academy in Venice, Italy this summer. Yeah, I'm going to be there from the weeks of August 7th through the 20th. We're going to do workshops and visit artists and curators and get passes into the Biennale. And we are going to drink a lot of coffee and eat gelato and pasta and toast with Prosecco. So there are only 15 spots left for the weeks that I'm there. So if you're thinking of coming, sign up soon. You can find info and everything at bit.ly/Venice_signup. Okay, so speaking of Europe, art, and delicious treats, insert perfect segue here, my guest today is smart, creative, incredibly busy, ever-evolving, and very well-versed in the pastries of Paris. Yep, Kat Cito is on the podcast today. She is a San Francisco-based artist, designer, author, mother, traveler, shop owner, and sleep-deprived woman who I cannot wait to chat with. I better call right now before she flies off to Paris again. Okay, calling Kat in San Francisco. Hi, Kat.
Hi, Danielle.
How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. I am so glad that we have a chance to do this. And honestly, I could spend the next hour just talking about Paris with you.
Oh, good, because I can definitely do that with you.
Oh, my gosh. I just went through your Instagram feed.
Yeah.
Oh, so many beautiful Paris shots. I was just like, yes, I could totally do that. My parents used to live in Belgium, and so it was just a quick train ride to Paris.
It is. Oh, my goodness. So you definitely know.
I know. Yeah, I've been there 5 times, I think.
Wow.
And, but in various stages of life, like as a backpacker, you know, as a, like on a family vacation. And then I went with my then boyfriend, now husband, and thought for sure he was going to propose.
Really?
He did not. But anyway.
Oh my goodness. Okay. Well, then see, you've gone through all the ages, like Paris, you really lived it.
But I haven't been back in so long. And so I know just looking at your feed, I was like, oh, and you look like you belong there.
Do I?
You do.
I mean, I'm a Michigan girl, transplanted to San Francisco. And so, yeah, Paris is something, you know, it was really different. So thank you.
Well, there's a few pictures of you on balconies and I thought you look like you're very at home. So
I was definitely trying to get into the whole Paris. Yeah. The
whole Paris, you nailed it. You nailed it.
Thank you.
So, well, let's go back. And I always do this on the podcast. I like to talk about what it was like when you were a kid and how you got to where you are. So Michigan.
Michigan. Yes. Troy, Michigan. Suburb off of Detroit, like 20 minutes away. And I grew up there basically. You know, there were not a lot of Asian kids there. So I was just this, you know, we were just there and really excited to be in this like suburb in the 70s. And then my dad was an engineer and he had all these blueprints that he would bring home.
Oh, yeah.
And we were just sort of, we had, you know, a comfortable living, not that much money. But the way to save money was that he would bring all the blueprints back and then I would draw on the backs of them because it was, you know, this clean white paper, but on the other side would be his sort of engineering blueprints.
Were they huge too?
They were huge.
Yeah.
And so my grandmother would take out this big knife and would start cutting down all this paper because I guess I was just somewhat of an obsessed drawer or doodler. And so they just occupied my time by like cutting up all this paper and putting it in a drawer and I'd pull it out and I'd just be drawing like at dinner and watching TV or, you know, going out. I would just haul all of his blueprints.
Wow.
Doodle. So it kind of worked out.
did your family immigrate or were they, did your parents grow up in Michigan too? Or how did you guys end up there?
My father's from Guangdong. So that's like southern part of China.
Okay.
And then my mom's from Hong Kong. And then they met actually in Canada.
Oh.
They were set up because my mom was a nurse there. And so They decided to move to Michigan. Well, my mom decided to come where my father already was in Michigan, and my aunt was there as well. And they just set up shop and decided to raise their family in their dream, stable. I mean, for them, stability coming from, my father came from this village with no running water and, you know, all these colorful stories about snakes and birds and cobras. And so, I mean, it really was his dream to just have like a completely stable life with a family.
Right. In a suburb, in a nice suburb.
And suburbs were exotic. So it was like for them, the ultimate dream.
Wow. And so, so you're drawing on the back of blueprints. Did you want to go to art school? Did you think that was something that you would do? And did you?
You know, I have to say, no, I think that I just was obsessed with it. And I think that it was always kind of grilled into my head, like, you know what, you're not gonna make money and you need to make a living. And so I always thought this was just something that I love to do. So, and they, I think for them, because they both worked, it was a great way to just keep me still.
Yeah.
So they didn't mind that I was carrying around all this paper and was like, you know, even at restaurants going out, I would sneak paper on my lap and I would just doodle and draw all day long. So it really was like a passion and an obsession, and nobody knew what to do with it. My parents did get concerned around grade school. They were just starting to think, oh, maybe she's going to want to be an artist. And so,
oh no,
I brainwash her, you know? So, like, so yeah, it did get to a point where they were concerned.
And so did you end up going to art school or did you do something else?
So I ended up making a deal with my dad that I would go, and I got into School of Visual Arts and then also locally at U of M at the art school and a few others that my dad was like, no way, you're not going there, kind of a thing. But he made this deal with me and he was like, you're going to a liberal arts university, public, you know, University of Michigan. And you can go to art school. You can go to the art school there. And so his secret plan was that I would get exposed to all of the other programs there.
Uh-huh.
Eventually kind of perhaps push me out of the art school. Yeah. So,
I think it might have backfired.
Yeah, it did. It did. Although I must say, when I was there at U of M, I actually ended up getting into writing. So,
oh, yes, I read that about you.
Yeah. So it was all really strange. And I think when I look back, I've always been like a real underdog, like, because when I got into U of M, at that time you had to take an essay entrance exam into writing. And so probably like under 6% didn't pass this essay.
Yeah.
Others passed out of it. So I was like, oh, there's no way. I mean, I'm going to be in the vast like majority, like the 80 whatever percentile of all these kids. And I actually was one of them that did not make it and had to go into what I would call like a remedial English class.
Oh, like, oh my gosh.
So I ended up doing that, but then and I ended up just going through art school and really thinking I was going to do something in that field. But then very last minute, my junior year, I took one poetry class, and I just turned in all these things I was scrawling on memos, all these poems, and it won an award that was, you know, in the English program. And then all of a sudden, you know, I was confronted with an MFA with writing instead of art. So, and because of that, I had to make a decision, and the grad school program offered a lot more money and support. Basically, you know, they're like, come and we will feed you and clothe you. And so I was like, okay, I have to stop and make sense of this. I'm not going to go to New York. You know, I was going to go to Pratt.
Okay.
But then instead I was like, you know what, I'm going to get support here and money and financial aid. And so I was like, I'm going to do my MFA in fiction. So I dovetailed at that point.
Wow. And was that still in Michigan then? Did you stay there?
Yeah. So much to my, even though I wanted to head out, I wanted to go to the West Coast, I wanted to go everywhere, I ended up staying there to finish my MFA.
And were you living at home the whole time?
No. So I was living in Ann Arbor, the campus, which is just for me, like if you meet anybody from U of M, you will see how crazy we are. We are diehard you know, Wolverines, like anybody we meet, we feel like they're family to us. Like we're just crazy people. So I would say like Ann Arbor is the most utopic environment, the most diverse, you know, just amazing in, you know, professors and students. And so I, you know, I was pretty happy and content to stay there, even though I was kind of itching to travel at that point.
Yeah. Cause it's a real university kind of town, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, don't even get me started. I feel
a chant coming on. Are there?
I feel like I'm going to plug this university.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really learned so much, and I was definitely a big part of the Asian American organizations there. So it was learning a lot of other things that weren't being taught in classes, just like fundraising or, you know, working for like passions in politics that, you know, you really cared for.
Hmm. Wow. Yeah. And so what were your parents thinking now? Now you're doing an MFA in fiction.
Yes, which was, you know, a little less scary to them because they thought, okay, she's going to be a teacher now. She can be, you know, she can try to be a professor.
Oh, that's a good, that's like, a good badge, yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, that's wonderful. So, you know, even though in my mind I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. You know, I'm just here for 2 years and I can write and just see where this goes, you know. But, so I did my fiction there, and then I ended up lecturing at the Comprehensive Studies program there, teaching the very class I could not get into.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious.
Like always been the underdog. One of the underdog stories was, you know, I couldn't get into this class, but I ended up teaching it in this really strange kind of twist. But then I always use that as to encourage students and just, you know, say I was not very positive about my path on this English 125 trail.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's crazy. And so, what did you think of teaching? Did I mean, I'm assuming it didn't interest you enough to keep going.
It was. I was in the Comprehensive Studies program, which actually we mentored. We taught English, but we also mentored students that had very challenging. They came from backgrounds, urban backgrounds, or some were even awaiting like heart transplants.
Oh my God.
So very, very special students. And I must say that I met some of the most amazing individuals ever through that. And I really did get into it to the point where it was so emotionally taxing for me because I was so into the kids.
Yeah.
That I was like, after a couple of years, I was like, okay, I think I now need to like focus and maybe do a fellowship and just, you know, really start to write.
Yeah.
And so that's when I actually applied, you know, to do a fellowship and left. And then left to come to San Francisco.
Oh my gosh. So how many years ago was that? Have you left
over
San Francisco?
10 years ago.
Yeah.
Long ago. I mean, I'm a dinosaur. So.
And so you haven't left San Francisco since?
No. So wow. I've been here and, you know, just doing and not doing writing.
Yeah. So you went there to write, though.
I went there to write and I had writer's block for a solid 2 years. I couldn't write. And I ended up like crafting wool felt finger puppets. You're going to think I'm crazy.
Oh my
now. Again. I'm not kidding you. Like, I just stare at my manuscript and then it'd be like 1 a.m., 2 a.m. And I'd be like, I need to do something with myself. I just was going stir crazy. So I started crafting like finger puppets. Like,
oh my God, I did not see the story going that way.
Nobody
I did not see that coming. Oh my God, but I love it so much. Okay, keep going. There's finger puppets and no writing. Go.
No writing. And I had this like those IKEA tiny little metal drawers on wheels.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I'd fill them up. Like I'd fill up the drawer with like all these monkeys and then like ducks, you know, and I just had this whole variety of like wool finger. And I thought, you know, I'm going to start a business or maybe I'll write a children's book, you know, but I'll do something with these things. And so I started sketching and drawing them, trying to come up with like a children's book idea or a children's product. And finally, then I got onto this article about this woman who did stationery and paper goods. And I was like, hey, why don't I turn this maybe into like a set of stationery? And so I started doing that. And then I started illustrating patterns to accompany the little characters. And I don't have a graphic design background. So I just drew like by hand. And I didn't even know how to do you know, a repeat pattern on computer, or definitely not a herringbone pattern. So I was drawing them all out.
Oh my God.
And so it all had this sort of wobbly, hand-drawn quality to the collection. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go to New York and do the stationery show and just debut this line and see where it goes. And so when I went to the show, one of my first clients was Anthropology. And I think they kind of appreciated that kind of wobbly line. You know, it wasn't perfect and, you know, it was hand-drawn and it somehow resonated with them. And that it just like completely excited me to the point where I was like, all right, I just got to drop everything. I'm not going to write. I'm going to full-time go into this. And that's how my paper collection started.
Okay. I have a lot of questions. Okay. First of all, isn't it quite expensive to go to the stationery show?
It is quite expensive.
So you just decided like, get the money and just like, this is what's going to open the door.
Yeah. But at the same time, I was telling myself, you know, it costs like probably at that time, maybe like $7,000 to get everything printed and then go fly and everything. But then I thought, you know, a lot of times like starting products, it can be in the tens, if not, I mean, you put enough zero behind it. So in my mind, I was kind of telling myself that entry is not that much of an entry. So right. I was kind of thinking, okay, and it's paper, and I still have control over just being able to manage this on a small scale. And if it doesn't work out, I can go back and, you know, it was just, it was for me the right kind of risk.
Yeah.
But I was really surprised when I went there and I didn't know what to expect. So I was really excited when some of the bigger companies came and I, you know, started to sort of work with the mom and pops, which are our bread and butter, all the wonderful independent mom and pop shops.
Yeah.
But really, you know, then I quickly had to learn. I remember they were, the buyers at Anthro were like, do you know how to, you know, do you warehouse? Do you, you know, and I was just nodding. Yeah. Oh yeah, I do. Of course. And then I was like scrambling, like running around asking people like, I don't know how to do this. I need help. I don't know what to do.
Oh so it was my God.
My first like business 101, like just get in there, street MBA, like just learn everything really fast.
Fake it till you make it. Well, that's what I was going to add. That was my other question. Were you like intimidated or were you, or did the little underdog just come out and you were like, let's do this thing?
No, I was excited at the same time. I was just overwhelmed by the talent and meeting all these amazing designers. I was not exposed to that industry at all. So it just was shocking to me just to see like, you know, all the products out there and what you could do with it. That really, I had to like pretty much just get up and run at that point.
And then so Anthropology comes by your table.
Yeah.
And were you like, what?
You know, yeah. And you know, I was wearing, I had like, it was so funny. It's like, I had old skirts that I wore that I bought from them. And I was just already obsessed with Anthro. And I had like tea cloths and I covered, you know, the stools with them. And they came by and they were so smart. They're like, that skirt is like 2 years ago. They're like going around it. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. But at the same time, I really felt like I knew the what they were looking for. Or I just loved what they were doing. And so it was really synergistic just to talk with them. It was very natural. Oh. So even though that was probably one of the most intimidating buyers to come by, I just felt really at home when I met them.
Yeah. Yeah. If things click, they click. And so the name of your, pronounce it for me.
Femme Papier. I'm very bad at this. You can hear it. I don't even pronounce it properly because I actually do not speak French.
And doesn't that mean closed paper?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a loose translation of like farm to paper.
Oh.
It's a very loose. And so at first when I started the brand, I wanted it to be sort of this like farm to table, like rustic meets chic, you know, kind of a mix. So it just kind of plays on the word a little bit.
And so did you go to the stationery show with that branding in place?
So that time that when I first started, it was all like, you should have seen who I was then. Pink, girly, feminine, shabby chic. you know, weddings and flowers and color. And so that was everything. My studio looked like that. It was nothing like what Firma Papier is now. And so, you know, some years went by and I just started to feel really burnt out and I didn't know what to do. And I just thought, I'm going to take a break. And I was 40 and I was like, I'm going to go to Paris for the first time because I'm tired. I don't know what to do. And so I'm just going to just get on the plane and go. So that ended up being this trip where I was just, it just turned my world upside down again. And when I came back, I sketched like I was when I was, you know, seven,
yeah,
like crazily for 3 weeks. And I had 52 like images that I was looking at. And I was like, this is nothing. The color palette, the mood, they were moody. They were dark. They were like navy and nothing like what I was doing before. And I just realized, oh my God, I have to like rebrand. So because it doesn't even look like anything that I'm doing. So then I decided to actually switch everything over, like remove Cat Cito, the wedding, and then turn this into Firma Papier.
Oh my gosh. Now at this stage, you didn't have your shop, did you?
I did have my studio, and we did weddings, and we had clients there. We still had like a little shop in the front too, but then everything got switched to the more artisanal, you know, navy.
Yeah.
You know, the Firma Papier brand.
And how long ago was this?
This was like 5 years ago, I want to say.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was really, I think they say in Chinese, like 7 years, every you change.
Yes. Yeah.
I guess I really I did that.
Like, yeah.
Weird way. Cause yeah, I didn't even recognize myself or what was coming out on the paper, but it really was just traveling and going to Paris and losing myself there. And it was, I think, a very authentic experience because I didn't go there to start a business and I wasn't looking for something to do. I just went gaga, like nuts.
Yeah.
On the street. And when I came back, then that's all when gears started to click and all of a sudden this collection came about.
Wow. And so did you go by yourself to Paris?
Yeah, I had, so I had friends there and I met up with friends, but I was pretty much like wandering a lot of the streets just with my dessert app. I had a dessert app and I had a nerdy like Excel, you know, spreadsheet. And it would buzz if I missed, like, you know, patisserie.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I need to go there with you.
You will not miss a thing because I had this geeky little thing that would buzz if I missed something.
Oh, my gosh, that's so awesome. And so did you, yeah, you know, and it's better when you're there by yourself because you don't miss anything. Like, you know, you're not chatting and, I mean, it's fun to share it with somebody, but when you're by yourself and you travel, you're so aware of everything.
Yeah.
Especially as a designer, right? Or an artist. Like, you notice the patterns and the colors and the mood and, you know, like the details on the pastries and all of that stuff because you're just in your own little bubble.
Oh, totally. Yeah. I mean, I must say I had my friend came like, you know, pretty much halfway in and then, you know, so I was halfway sometimes by myself, which was so essential, and other times seeing through eyes of folks who've been there and know the area.
Yeah.
And so that together was really fascinating for me.
How long were you there?
I was there the first time I went, I was only there for less than 2 weeks, so like 10 days, mm-hmm. 10, 11 days. But I kept going back maybe sometimes twice a year.
Wow.
And just going back and forth because I was like, well, I got to do this for the collection.
Yeah.
I've got to get there.
Better have a lemon tart while I'm there too, just in case I want to work that into the collection.
Exactly.
I see exactly what's going on here now. And so, okay, but amidst all of that, you have a little boy.
I do. And Nolan, he's 7 now. That year that, I don't know if I'm digressing into this now, but
that's okay. That was my fault, but we'll come back.
I was pregnant. So this was before, just before I went to Paris. So I was pregnant. My sister was pregnant. So Nolan and his cousin are 10 weeks apart. And my mother passed away suddenly of a hemorrhagic stroke in my second trimester. And we were just devastated because both of my sisters, like we were, you know, these would be her first grandchildren. And I think as a family, we felt like just robbed, and we felt she was robbed, you know, of this experience. And so for me, it was a really tough time because I also was starting to feel sick, you know, and when I returned back from all of that long process, I started to go into like preterm contractions way early. And so, you know, I was in the hospital for 2 weeks, and then I had to be on bed rest. And so I wasn't even really thinking emotionally like to mourn. Like I was just like, I can't get stressed out. I have to just hold my baby in. Like I felt that protectiveness already. And then when I gave birth, then I had a really difficult delivery, which ended up with, you know, recovery that lasted like 8 weeks. So it was probably like the longest year of my life going through all that emotionally, physically. And I really was at that point where I thought, you know, I just want to crawl in a hole, and I just want to, you know, I just want to like never come out.
Yeah,
I'm really at that point. And just thinking I've got to really like be present for my son at the same time. So I had this group. It was a mommy's kind of designing group. Mm. And I really leaned heavily and put all my energy into trying to build this group and also leaning on them. And it was the best thing that could have happened. They were so supportive, and it kept me creative. And having these moms around, it was really the best thing for me. And so long story short, that's when a full circle, Meg Alasco then approached me to co-author the Mom Inc. book.
Yeah, it's so funny because we booked this podcast to talk about Paris. And then I was like, I knew your name sounded familiar, but I couldn't figure out where. I just assumed it was through the art world and whatever. And then I was like, she did Mom Inc. And I was like, oh my gosh. So yeah. So, okay. Yes. So was Meg part of your mom group or?
So Meg, I was trying to rope her into my mom group.
Okay.
You know, and then I remember she was like, oh yeah, let me get back to you. You know, and then I didn't hear from her. And then when I did, and she was like, hey, I have a project that I want to ask you about. And so that's how it all kind of began, is we then began co-authoring the book. And I just was blown away that, you know, in the end, we got to dedicate it to our mothers. And I just thought, wow, what a long, 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 like full kind of journey that was. But also that in the end, you know, I was really happy just to be able to put a book out that hopefully would, you know, give moms a chance to think about ways to be creative or run a business and balance family. Like all of that was just so personal for me.
Yeah, you were living it.
Yeah. And so that experience, on top of so many that I've had in my life, I feel has always been about authenticity and just, you know, the moments come and the projects come from from experiences in my life that have either been really either strange or difficult.
Yeah.
And then just kind of moving through those, then the opportunities came in a really organic way. So I kind of think that's kind of the path that I've kind of had, is a strange bohemian kind of way.
Yeah. Yeah. It is really nice. Like even when you said about going to Paris, you know, you weren't going there to brainstorm a new business or anything. It was just, you know, to have this moment and to have this break, and all of a sudden, you know, things change so dramatically.
Yeah, I think that anytime I've ever tried to push something, I have failed miserably. So
yeah, sometimes it's that square peg round hole thing, right? Where you're just, yeah, you have to let it happen.
Exactly. I cannot push through. They won't let me through.
Yeah. Okay, so were you pregnant when you went to Paris, or was he a baby? No.
So by then, he was like 2.5, maybe.
Oh, okay.
So I was able to just go and just, it was terrible though, because you know the time change. So I was like getting up at 3 a.m. To call in.
Yeah.
So, and then I'm also like, I was like, you know, I was guilt ridden. At the same time, I was completely floored and inspired. So it was this interesting time of finding myself and like finding enough time to, you know, really actually immerse myself and be creative. So, but then, yeah, I went back, you know, every year, and would, you know, develop the collections based on whatever. And some years I didn't go, or some years I didn't make it in enough time to hit the stationery show that happens in May.
Okay.
Sometimes I would just go to New York and I would wander the museums, you know, and ideas would come that way. But that was really, you know, sort of this way I would travel and go. And I never was a traveler before because I felt guilty of doing that. But this time I felt like I had a purpose to be there.
It sounds really nice. I mean, I know exactly. My son is 10 now. And I remember, you know, I realized when I was about, when he was maybe 2.5 years old, well, same thing, that I needed my own outlet. You know, I loved him very much, but I needed to be more than just Charlie's mom. And I wanted to get back into being creative. And I would go and, you know, just have the afternoon to my, I lived in Vancouver at the time. And I just go and have this artsy afternoon. And it would be so amazing. But at the same time, I felt so guilty that I wasn't there when he woke up from his nap.
Absolutely.
You know? It's,
yes. Yes. I totally know.
And he was fine.
Yeah,
you know?
I know.
And then the first time I was ever away from him overnight, I was actually going to Alt Summit for the very first time. And he was, and he was 4, I think. And had this weird cheap flight. And so I had to land in Vegas and then continue from there. And so I would get to Vegas. I've never been away from him on a plane. And so I phoned from, and before that he'd been very, very clingy. And so I landed and I phoned home and my husband put him on the phone and I said, "Hi buddy, I miss you so much." And he said, "I don't really miss you, mommy."
Oh no, you're kidding me.
And like half of me was so relieved. And the other half of me was like, "Are you freaking kidding me? I have given you everything for the last 4 years." But it was, you know, as soon as he was like, "Yeah, I don't really miss you," I was like, "Well, all right. Mommy's going to have a glass of champagne when she gets to Salt Lake City." And suddenly it was like, oh, okay. Like, here we go, you know? And I still don't love being away from him for huge amounts of time, but at the same time.
But that's a moment you can pocket and remember always, like,
Yeah, he doesn't care. I mean, especially now at 10, he's got his, I mean, he misses me and I miss him, but he's got his own thing going on and I've got my own thing going on. And then we come home and have our thing together, you know, but that is such a big thing for moms, is realizing that you get to be you still.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And there's, you hit that point. I think I hit a certain point where I let go and I just allowed, you know, myself to be immersed in whatever I was doing. And that was really important, I think. Yeah. And I still juggle that. I'm still guilt-ridden to this day.
Sure. Because your mother, that comes with the territory.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there's like a hormone that's like excreted into you the minute you give birth. It's just like the guilt hormone. That's just like, it just goes through your whole system and there's nothing you can do. Okay, so Mom Inc., what year did that come out?
Oh my goodness.
2012? 2013?
I think it was
like at least 2011.
12.
There you go. And so after that came out, did you ever think that you would do a book?
No. And in fact, I never thought that would be my first book because I was going to be a fiction writer.
Oh, that's right. You
know, I was going to do the novel and the, you know, and I was going to do this, you know, very serious, you know, historical Asian American, you know, so, and then it ended up being a book about, you know, moms running businesses and a creative business. So, but then I always think, wow, that first book had a very personal meaning, you know, which was really about my experience and the pain I sort of went through before, and then meeting these moms and interviewing other moms. Mm-hmm. Who, like, you know, are just doing, I mean, from, you know, cakes to, like, foods to, like, print and pattern. So that, I thought, was a very inspiring and humbling experience to have that, you know, and be co-authoring, too, with Meg.
How did it feel to write again?
It felt great. It was really rusty, I must say.
Did you feel blocked or were you ready to go?
You know what it was? It was we got to interview 17 other moms. And so Meg and I split up our list. And I went to New York and one of them was Sylvia Weinstock, one of my favorites. Mm-hmm. She's like the cake diva. And so, you know, that really helped to actually just sit and, you know, and talk to them. The writing just came from that energy.
Yeah.
So that really helped to.
Yeah, you're not staring at a blank page. You've got their story to tell.
No, and it's not me. Like I couldn't start to like the critic in my head wasn't coming out, you know, when I had all these wonderful people and their stories. So that was really helpful for me because I think I could have probably put a lot of like, you know, just focused in on myself to the point I couldn't write again.
Yeah. Well, that's what I wondered when you said, you know, you got to San Francisco and were just like, I wondered if, you know, when you're working on Mom Inc., if any like little sock finger puppets came up again.
Yeah, exactly.
Little monkey puppets. Oh boy, here we go again.
I know. If anybody saw me with those drawers, I mean, that was like hidden in the closet. That was my secret.
Oh, it'll be the next great American novel about a monkey and a duck. Yes, it's all coming together.
Monkeys, yeah, in the drawer.
Oh, it could have been a very dark, dark fiction novel.
It could have been. It was almost there.
And then so now, well, now you're about to have another book come out.
Yes.
In like a couple of weeks from now. And so... how did that come about? Like, cause that, so if 2012, like that, there's a gap between that and Mom Inc. Did you ever think you would do another one? And how did you end up doing this?
No, I really did not. I must say, I never think anything the projects, some of the bigger projects, I never see it coming.
Yeah.
So I'm always a little bit like, whoa. And so, and in between, I did a stationery gift series with Chronicle Books called Jouy de Jour. And, they do those wonderful, like, journals and sticker label sets. And so I did one of those, and it was based off of sort of, like, living in the moment. And based off, it was also had this, like, very Parisian-French vibe to it. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, oh, okay, this is great. I'm doing products. I'm doing stationery. I'm working with Chronicle Books in a different way now. And this is all aligning. And then all of a sudden, my agent, Kate, who you know, dear Kate, she's like, hey, Kat, you know, have you thought about a Paris book? And I just was like, what? You know, I just was like, and she was like, think about it. You know, she's like, it's so exactly what you've been doing. You've been going back and forth to Paris. And, you know, you seem to have all of these like rich, like imagery and things that are a little bit different from your collection. So I began to sort of think about that, and I really put it on hold for a long time. And then I in my relationship, I was having trouble, and there was a crisis in it. And I remember then I started just walking the hills of San Francisco for hours. Like I broke out and I was walking for hours and hours every day, pacing around and, you know, just thinking, you know, what do I need to do or what am I going to do with my business? And all of a sudden, the book came about. Like all of a sudden I could see, the places. It's almost like I could imagine being in Paris, you know, and just, I was almost siphoning the joys I had there.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it just became very, very real. Like I had the urge to pen it and doodle it down. So then I remember emailing Kate back and I was like, I'm ready. I think I know. And so that's when we proposed the book. And so that was also something then I returned back to Paris and I was like, I can't even believe it's almost surreal that like that trip going back that I was actually going to be sketching Paris, you know, for so
that would have just been so surreal.
Yeah. I mean, because I was just always a tourist, like just moving through it, living through it, eating through it, absorbing, taking from it. And then now I felt a little more like responsible. Like I had to go there and I really had to try and capture this now and put it and make something and create, a narrative.
And so how did that feel?
That was pretty amazing to be able to stand. Like, I spent a lot of time in the botanical gardens there, and I just was lost, you know, moving through there, and there'd be school children sitting there, and we'd all be sitting there drawing, and they'd be like, who is this adult, you know, Asian girl sitting there with us trying to get her, you know, get her moment. And I was like, but I just was really, I felt like I was really then, like, living and being a part of every day. And almost like hidden behind there with my sketch pads and drawing and taking thousands of photos. And there was just not enough time, and I was just running through all the places that I wanted to go and capture. That was really surreal to do that. And the book, I basically had like 4 months, a little under, like to really to go and get it done.
Wow.
So I was like panic stricken at the same time, elated and excited all the same.
And so how did you, because it's broken down into 4 sections.
Yes. So
it's color.
Yes. So 4 elements of art, color, pattern, perspective, and rhythm.
And how did you decide on that?
So I was just thinking about, you know, an artist's sketchbook or the way artists sort of, you know, when they're actually looking at a piece. For me, when I used to do painting, I would either come at it from, you know, a perspective, or sometimes I would be color driven from the get-go. And so I thought, you know, wouldn't it be interesting to look at the city that way? Perhaps the way I kind of come about drawing and painting, which is to see it in this very, the scope of art. Like, so with color, for me, the whole color palette, it, you know, changed my career. Yeah. But also colors in the details and the minutiae of the city. So I did a lot of food, like the Berthelon, the ice cream, the glasses, and then the jellies at Jacques Chenin. I thought those were good, like warm color palettes, macarons, like all of these different, you know, things that I was moved through the city with. I thought those were really good color studies. And I portrayed that in the first chapter.
And yeah, then, it must have been hard to cull that down. It was so much.
Man, did I have to eat like there was no tomorrow
through
that chapter.
Your little app was buzzing constantly.
Poor me. I had to just eat my way through everything.
Oh, it must be so hard. Good for you for getting through it.
I know. So, and the last chapter was the rhythm.
Yeah.
Which I thought was, I thought instead of it just literally being rhythm, in art, it would also be the life of the city. And so I remember like going on Bastille and dancing, like all the firehouses shut down to celebrate Bastille Day, and it's free. So you can line up in queue around to the firehouses and they hold dance parties.
Wow.
And the buildings are so close together, you can hear echoing, like really, you can hear people laughing, and it bounces off the walls as you're going towards the firehouses. And then you get in there and everyone's really like, they're dancing and festive. And it's just the most amazing thing in the city. And so rhythm also for me was, you know, capturing that, like moments in the city.
Yeah.
That portray that, or dogs walking. Like I have a little thing where these dogs are pattering across all the little pretty well-behaved Parisian dogs.
It does. Paris is a really, really special place. There's something, you just kind of can't replicate.
No, it's magical. It's just magical.
Yeah. And when I saw that you included rhythm, I thought that was just brilliant, because there really is something about even the river going through and, you know, there's just, I thought that was so smart to have that in there.
I just really felt alive there in a really different way, and appreciating, you know, sort of the everyday. Mm-hmm. I think that's what Paris taught me, beauty in the everyday and the minutiae or the people.
Mm-hmm.
And that they so appreciated, you know, art and creatives. And that was something that I was just in love with.
Mm-hmm. Every time the last time I went there was backpacking. And my girlfriend had a backpack with a big Canada flag on the back, and her running shoes and her big camera. And I was like, okay, so why don't we split up for a bit? And I had a jaunty little scarf and like a little, I liked pretending that I lived there. Like I liked to just blend in as much as I could. And I was sitting outside the Louvre, and I had this American family. They were from like somewhere in the South, came up, and they said, excusez-moi, parlez-vous anglais? And I said, oui, un petit peu, a little bit. And totally pretended to be like a Parisian girl. It was the best.
And you were probably like, yep, I am
living the dream. And meanwhile, this little girl from Canada, I think I was about 22 at the time, 23. And but yeah, I just loved being a fly on the wall there. I used to just love sitting in cafes and people watching, and you know, having a chocolate croissant and a coffee, and just like I could do that all afternoon, you know, where my friend had like our Lonely Planet checklist, and she's like, we have to go to this cathedral and then this and this and this. And I was like, I just want to sit here and pretend I live here for a little bit, and then I'll go see all this stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, really, it's just because you can actually just go from the storefronts. You're just looking at the beautiful storefronts, and when the sun kind of goes down and at night, it's just like little jewels. So you can just wander around endlessly.
Does that affect the way that your store is set up?
It did. It's sort of, I wanted that same moody kind of feel.
You can tell. I mean, I've only seen photos. Next time I'm in town, I'll come by. But like the bicycle in the window, and, you know, it's got that very much.
Yeah.
That vibe.
And we work in the back. It's a very small, you know, petite little studio. But, you know, we kind of use up all the space. And then we have the little shop in the front. Very much kind of like studios in San Francisco. But also it's got that, I wanted the sort of the dark navy walls and the exposed wood and just like tile floors. So that part, I wanted to bring a little Paris into it.
Yeah. Well, okay. So first of all, the book, it's called Impressions of Paris.
Yes.
And so I'll put all the info in the post about when it comes out in April 4th, right?
Yes.
But I was doing a little researching because I was like, ooh, I should plan this podcast for right when it comes out. But you can pre-order it right now anyway.
Yes, you can.
So I was like, who cares? I'm going to talk to her right now. And then so I'll put links so people can find. Okay, so that's the next question I have. So you have so much, you make so much stuff. So you've got a kid, you've got this book now, you've got like all of your products, like all the paper, and like there's so much stuff. So is it, there's a team, right? It's not just you by yourself anymore, is it? Please tell me there's a team.
It's about four of us. And yes, so but we are all doing everything all the time, 24/7. I feel like, we're sweeping, we're cleaning, we're designing, we're punching out a customer. We're like, extra small, you got it. You know, I'm ordering, you know, merchandise. I mean, it's a little bit like anybody who's going to be at the studio had better be prepared to do everything.
Yeah. And so are there other people then designing some of the paper, or is that all you?
I have Monique and Rachel, and they're like so important to me because they both have different sort of values. And so, you know, Monique has more of this graphic design and Rachel's kind of hands-on paper. And so I think we kind of can come together and put things together pretty fast.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm just sort of, you know, I'm the doodler. I think I'm the doodler.
The house doodler. I love that. I hope you're doing it on the back of giant blueprints.
Yeah, I know, honestly, right?
You should do a line that has blueprints underneath and then doodles on top.
I can still smell those blueprints.
I bet the ink and everything. I know. That's awesome. Okay, I don't know when you sleep, but yeah, I assume at some point.
No, well, I'm sure you don't sleep as a mommy and creative, I'm sure, right?
It's I fit it in. Yeah. Where I can. Actually, one of the things I wanted to ask you, because I saw that the portraits that you do.
Yes.
And so are those, do you ever just do, like, do you just do them out of your imagination, or are they all commissions?
No.
They're so beautiful.
Oh, thank you. I do custom illustrations, and I'll take on like portraits or families. I was really into this Wes Anderson phase.
So
I love doing like little wonky couples, you know, against like the backgrounds with the paintings all over. So I just love doing that. I don't know why.
Like, it's interesting because you said how much you love the interviews with Mom Inc. It's sort of the same thing.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. That could be it.
Getting their stories.
Yes. I think it's really inspiring for me to sort of see into their world and capture them. I think that's really something that, you know, motivates me.
Yeah, I love them. You can totally see that in them, you know, and your color choices and everything, and the way your brush strokes are, like, they're so lovely.
Oh, thank you.
I found that in my searching around too, when I realized that you did Mom Inc.
Yes.
All these things. And so I'm like writing down my list of all the things, and I'm like, still writing. I'm still writing. It's just like, good Lord. Okay. So before we do the not so speedy speed round,
yeah,
I wanted to know, I mean, I guess you don't know what I was going to say, what's next for you, but I guess you're just going to wait and see. Or do you know right now?
You know, I've been really into, so right now, because of the administration and, you know, women's rights, and so I've been really also spending a lot of time just almost like, you know, doing commissions for organizations and nonprofits. And then I also started a group called Saving Faces, which is for, you know, we donate and we also, it's makers for women, women's rights. And, but basically it's using creativity to create advocacy for women's rights. And so that's something that I've been sort of personally doing. And who knows where any of this, you know, I never expect anything to go anywhere. It's just really what I'm feeling right now.
Yeah.
But that's really kind of what I'm doing. And then also trying to get back to writing as well.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I'm like, you know, my dad's going to be so, he's like, you went to U of M and you wanted this degree and blah, blah, blah. So it's like,
maybe you should write his memoir. Then he'll be super happy.
Oh, I'm sure he would. Yes, he would love it.
And so are you working on something fiction related?
You know, I'm like, I was rusty then and I am rusty now. Yeah. So I better just start to melt the ice, you know?
Yeah.
Go any further, but just let's just try to melt that ice.
Well, I think the key for you might be interviewing people and then go from there.
Yeah.
I think that's what's come out in this podcast.
I think you could probably be writing a few novels.
Oh, God.
All so many interviews you've done.
I know. Well, you know what? Our lovely friend Kate is in the middle of pitching a new book for me.
Oh, this is exciting.
Which involves the stories of a whole bunch of people.
Oh, my goodness. Well,
but
here we
somebody
go.
Somebody has to buy it. So, you know what? It might never happen.
Well, sure it will. Oh, that's exciting.
I know. It's just out there. I feel like a crazy person because all day I just keep hitting refresh on my email to see if there's anything coming back. And, you know, it's just like that, you know, and then I go for a walk and I come back and I'm like, oh, I was gone for 20 minutes. Maybe. Oh, refresh.
Yeah, nothing. Exactly.
So I need to chill out.
Might get like a crazy call and then you'll be like, what?
I know.
Right?
So, yeah, exactly. That's the thing is I never know what's coming either, which is really fun, you know, and I've learned, I was such a planner for so long. I was a creative director in an ad agency, you know, and it's like, it's so much more fun to wake up in the morning and not know what's going to be in your inbox and just do what you love and see what happens, you know? And so anyway, I hope this happens. It's not fiction
I'm
though.
Oh, sure it will. How exciting.
Yeah. But I wanted to ask you so about this organization that, what did you say it was called?
Saving Faces.
And can people get involved with that? Like, are you?
So there are, you know, on the board of advisors, Lisa Congdon is. I saw that she was on. She had done two or, podcasts.
Yeah, we're good friends, and I was in Portland doing a book signing for the Big Jerk book, and so Lisa and I did a live one. I've never done that before.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, so it was a book signing, and I was like, hey, I'll bring my mic and let's do a live one. And it was
wonderful.
So fun. Yeah, she's awesome. Okay, so Lisa,
Lisa, and then I have also this amazing woman. She's SF Police Commissioner, but she also founded the first domestic women's shelter in California. Like really just an amazing woman, 40 years of service. I mean, really, this woman did it and is continuing to do it. And so all these amazing women advising, and then we also plan to do a campaign where we're going to collect signatures for a secret, we'll announce it, where we're going to, we want to kind of use visuals to make a statement what's going on. So, yeah.
So okay, well, I'll put all the info in, and I guess, like, will you be looking for artists to be involved?
Yes, I absolutely, it's a big call for artists, creatives. We absolutely want this to be about using creativity to make a statement and to advocate and to stand up for rights.
I think that's so important. I've talked about that a lot since November 8th, that, you know, how I mean, I minored in art history. And so I find all those stories so cool. And when things happen in politics, art changes, you know,
and
new movements come about and, you know, messages are brought to the masses that aren't in other ways. And so I think art is such an important, valuable way to do that. And I think this is just so great.
Absolutely. and authentic art too at this time is so needed. And I'm so passionate about it.
Okay, well, I'll put all of that in so that people can go and look it up. And because the bulk of my listeners are women and they are artists. So I'm sure they're all like dying, like they're probably Googling it right now.
Awesome. I'm so excited.
You're a force to be reckoned with.
Oh no, I am so thankful to be here. And I know that you said you're kind of taking a break after the 100.
That's the plan.
And so I feel very honored.
Yeah, no, I mean, I really wanted to have this conversation, and there's been a whole bunch of surprises in here that are just gems that I didn't even expect. So that's even better. Yeah, I know. I don't know what I'm doing. I said 100 because 100 is like a really good number, right? And apparently after iTunes starts archiving them after 100 anyway, so then you don't see the rest. Like you only see the most recent 100.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, well, maybe 100 is a good time to stop, which would be about 2 years of doing it, right?
Right.
But then I don't want to stop. I can't stop.
Well, you're wonderful. I mean, you're such a natural and you really bring out, I just feel like I can just talk with you. I mean, very few people can do that, I think, can just naturally kind of move like through conversations. And I hope you continue.
I know. I feel like, I think, you know, it felt nice to say I'm going to stop. And then right after I did, I was like, I don't really want to. And then I had so many people say, no, don't stop. And so I don't know. Maybe I feel like right now, so what is this? 94 or something, 93, 94. I feel like I'm starting to have to scramble.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have canned episodes. So like every week I'm like, oh my God. And it's a lot of work. Right. And so I was like, well, do I change the format? But I don't see how I would do that because I love, just like you, I love hearing other people's stories.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking maybe do I just take July and August off and hang out with Charlie and jump into the
lake.
Go to Paris. Oh, I'm going to Venice for 2 weeks.
Oh, well, there we go.
And so I'm like, do I just do that and then come back totally recharged and maybe the format will change just like you, right? Like maybe something will happen in Venice and it will just make the format change or maybe I'll just come back recharged and ready to go. But I feel like, you know, I keep telling people, no, like I will still bring art to your ear. I just don't know. I think I just need a tiny break to figure out exactly how and why and what.
Yeah, the essence will be there. We'll just see what form comes back, right?
Yeah, yeah. And people are busy in the summer. They won't even notice. Before you know it, it'll be September. Because I think this will take me through until like June.
Yeah.
And then, just July and August off.
Oh, so, how exciting.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I've got a big summer full of art shows and cool things happening. And my husband and I were adding up how many podcasts we've posted from different parts of the world now where either he's traveling or I'm traveling because he produces it. So he has to do half of it on his computer and then I upload it on mine.
Oh,
and so he's phoning from wherever and he's like, okay, it's live, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay. And then when we were in Hawaii on vacation, we were, you know, we didn't done everything ahead of time for 2 episodes so that we could post from Maui
and
a bit of a gong show. So I think taking a summer off, but at the same time, I know I'm going to be itching to get back. So if that makes anybody feel better, I promise I'm not going away forever.
Good.
I'm too addicted myself.
Good.
Okay. So this is so funny. The first question in the not so speedy speed round, this made me laugh at the beginning when you said this. Okay. Ready?
Yeah. Okay.
Favorite dessert in Paris?
Oh gosh. Why'd you ask that?
But now you have an app for crying out loud.
Oh my goodness. You're asking me to choose children now, right?
I know. I'm sorry.
Favorite?
Say you find out you're going to Paris tomorrow. Uh-huh. What's the first treat you're going to buy?
Oh, this is bad. There are like three that came in, but I'll just name one.
Okay.
The passion fruit, there's a caramel, there's a Jacques Janine passion fruit. It's like pure. You put it in your mouth, it melts, it's like butter. It's amazing. Okay. And then
can I say the other two. I know you can't.
And then, of course, like, I've got to have like these, what do you call it? There's a flavor at the Berthelon and I can't believe it's slipping my mind, but it's also like eating like a piece of fruit. Like if they have like a banana, you're eating a banana.
But is it ice cream?
Yeah. I mean, you're literally, but you're like, this is what a banana is supposed to be. But I'm eating ice cream, but it's more than what a banana is. It's like,
this is what a banana should be.
It this is what a banana really is. It's ice cream.
Okay, and number three.
So I have to say, like, a macaron, it could be from, you know, one of three places, but it's like, but there's, you know, I love, like, the rose or the pistache macaron.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
Oh, that's good. Well, those all sound very good. My first, I went with my husband when, what, the time I thought he was going to propose, that he did not propose, but anyway. It was his birthday when the day we landed, and so we went to a crepe cart and got him a Nutella filled crepe because, you know, Nutella.
Okay.
And then we found this little place, I think it's called Paul's, or I don't think I'm getting that wrong. I think it's called Paul's, and it's over by the George Pompidou Center, and it's upstairs. It's this little patisserie, but there's like a, I think there's a coffee shop downstairs, but then you can sit upstairs and it's like a little tea room. And we went up there and I had the best lemon tart of my life, like with the shortbread crust.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, boy.
Oh, my goodness.
I can taste it right now.
The best lemon that was at the Paul's.
Yes. Oh. But you know what? I'm not even a lemon tart kind of gal, but that it was so, so good. So that's what I always think of when I think of Paris.
Oh, wow. I need to put that on. Where's this on my app?
I don't know. I'm going to Google it. Maybe I have the thing wrong, but it's right over by the Pompidou.
Oh, my God.
I know.
Goodness.
When are you going back next? Do you have a plan?
Well, I need to make another excuse.
Yeah. Well, there you go. The lemon tart. That can be your excuse.
Okay, for sure.
Okay. See, this is why it's the not so speedy speed run. Okay. So next question. If you had, because you are a busy lady, if you had 1 hour completely to yourself, what would you do? And you're not allowed to say, like, work or, like, laundry or anything.
Oh, I can't. Okay.
No.
One hour?
Yeah. Okay, you know what? Let's say an afternoon. Because 1 hour you can't do very much.
It depends as a mommy, right? Like, I'm going to just say this. It sounds really lame. But I don't mind just being in my car with the top, like, the sunroof out under a tree. And I just, like, bought a bunch of, like, things from the bakery and, like, eating some of it and then napping for, like, 50 minutes. I know that sounds really bad, but, like, you know, I mean, today, that's what I would love to do.
Oh. I'll come and sit beside you. I promise I won't talk.
You know, the sun's coming down through the summer. I know it's not glamorous or anything, but, you know.
Oh, my God, I love it.
You nap for, like, 50 minutes.
Okay, I'm coming to San Francisco at the beginning of June, and I'm going to come by the shop. We will go and get some pastry, and we'll go sit under a tree.
Okay, and I'll park us in front of something scenic. You know, it's very scenic, the water and everything. But, you know,
I love it. I'll be in a haze of gluten and sugar anyway, so I don't really care where we are.
Exactly.
Okay, deal. Favorite art supply?
Oh, favorite art supply.
I'm really pushing you today, aren't I?
You're pushing me. I love, for me, it's paper, I have to say. Like, I love a Fabriano paper.
Yeah.
That's from my wedding, when I did weddings. But I just love the texture and the crisp and the snap of it.
And so if you went into a supply store, you would just be like, ooh,
yeah,
the paper.
Rub the hand over that.
Yeah.
That paper. Yeah.
I have mentioned this before on the podcast, but there's a place in Toronto called the Japanese Paper Place.
Oh, gosh. It sounds intense. Like, it's the real stuff.
It's crazy town. Like, my ad agency was just around the corner from there, and I would sometimes go in at lunch and just stand there and look at stuff.
Yes.
It's so awesome.
Japanese, when they curate the paper, it's like another level, right?
You know, because you can go in there and it's like, ooh, there's the blue section, and it goes into the green section and it fades into, you know, it's just like, oh my God.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So if you ever find yourself in Toronto, Japanese paper place.
Okay. So deal. I'll go over, if you're in Toronto, and we'll go look at paper. And then if you're in San Francisco, then we'll sit in the car and eat pastry. Okay.
It's so good to have these things planned out ahead of time.
Exactly.
That's why organized, busy moms have to do. You have to plan these things.
Yes.
Okay, so last one. Well, now, see, I'm going to know this too. Would you rather paint? Charlie really loves would you rather, so I always have to end with a would you rather. Would you rather paint someone else's portrait or have your portrait painted?
Oh, well, thank goodness we ended on an easy one that I can answer. Definitely love painting other people's portraits.
Have you ever had someone paint you?
No.
Would you?
Don't like it. No.
No.
I hate, actually, it's like on social media, I have like a lot of photos and everything, but I actually do not like it. I hate it.
Yeah.
I must say. So I much prefer being behind it and like painting somebody or painting something.
That's very interesting.
Absolutely.
Anyway, okay. So there, that was all of my questions.
Okay. Survived it. It was, okay, not, no, these were, they were good because I had too much. Yeah. I guess I can see now why it's not the not so speedy.
I know it's hard. Like, you know, and I always have follow-ups. I can never just say like, what's your favorite pastry? You know, yeah. And then you say yeah. whatever, and I move on. Like, I want to know where you got it and stuff.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Exactly.
I had great plans when I started this podcast that I was getting to this really fun speed round at the end. And then, but now I feel like I need to trademark not so speedy speed round because that,
totally
that is what it has become. Yeah. TM. Anyway, well, thank you so much. I'm going to put a great big post together. It's going to be a gigantically long post of all the stuff that you do. And, links for people to go and find out more about all sorts of things so they can get the, well, both books and they can find out about this organization and go and visit you in your shop and all this good stuff. So that will go up on the site when the episode goes up, which will be this coming weekend.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay.
I move fast.
You do move fast. No, thank you so much. You're wonderful.
It was really fun, Kat. It was really fun to like, get to know you a little bit and hear all the inside scoop, and you have probably the best laugh I've ever heard.
Oh no, really?
Yeah, it's a
good
one.
I was like, I can't laugh too much because it's just gonna be, you know, too much audio, too much audio.
That's Greg's problem. He's the one that has to balance it. That's his problem. At least I didn't swear. He gets mad at me if I swear. I didn't swear once, so that's really good.
Oh my gosh! I know. I feel like it was so easy to know you on this. I mean, you're so it's so natural.
Are you trying to convince me to go past 100?
Yeah.
Done. You convinced me.
Okay,
thank
good.
You very much. That's very, very nice. I mean, this was exactly like getting my portrait painted. Greg kept saying, you should do a podcast. And I was like, oh my God, like, I don't want to hear my own voice. And it's so techie and I don't know how to do a podcast. And now it's like 2 years have gone by and it's just, it's completely addictive. And it's just like, wow,
yeah.
I never thought I would do something like this.
Amazing.
Yeah, so
really?
Who knows?
What a collection that you have is amazing.
I know. I love it. I love that collection. You know, it's just the, every time I've said this before, but my husband and son always tease me because as soon as I get out from recording, I come out and I'm like, oh, and they're like, best one yet. Because every time I'm like, that was the best one yet. Because everybody has such great stories and everyone is so willing. What I love so much is everyone's honesty and just willing to share their story, the good stuff, the bad stuff. And that's what resonates with people, right? Because
yes.
You need to know that these people who are doing all this amazing stuff had these dark moments or, you know,
yes.
weren't sure what they were doing constantly either. Like everybody has those moments of doubt.
Oh,
and,
totally.
Yeah.
But really, in all honesty, you helped to bring that. I mean, I feel just completely at ease. Like I'm just talking to, I feel like I kind of like, you know, we were in the car just like, you know, sunning ourselves with fake goods just now. I mean, I just feel very at ease talking to you. So I think that it's really... Of course, and due credit for all of you bringing it out of everyone.
Well, thank you. I wish there was a chocolate croissant right here. But yeah, I will be there from like June 6th or something through the 10th or 11th. So I'll give you a call.
Okay.
I'm doing a couple of events while I'm there.
Okay.
Are you going to be there?
I will be there. And so if you need to, I can take you to the best little patisseries if you want to go somewhere.
Let's do it.
Do it.
Okay, I will email you about this, and I will meet you in June.
Sounds good.
Okay, I will talk to you soon.
Thanks, Danielle.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Seriously, best laugh ever, right? I love this conversation so much. Now I want to draw on blueprints and fly to Paris and eat dessert all day long. Actually, that sounds like a really good plan. Oh, and speaking of really great plans, I just wanted to give you an update on the whole ending at 100 episodes situation. After talking about this with Kat and zillions of you, I know what I'm going to do. Seasons. Yes, Art for Your Ear Season 1 will have had a whopping 100 episodes. I don't think any other season has ever had that many episodes of anything. The program will then take a summer hiatus, returning with Season 2 in September. Ta-da! Also, how fancy does having seasons sound? It's like The Bachelor or Homeland, but you know, like not at the same time. Anyway, I digress, but I'm feeling really, really good about that idea, and I hope you are too. Thank you so much to everyone who reached out to me with ideas of how to keep this going while taking the occasional break to creatively recharge. You guys are very, very smart. All right, and with that, I will say thank you so much to Saatchi Art for supporting this episode, and big high fives to you for listening. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.